Obsessed.
Hey friends, welcome back. I'm Ash, and this week is the story of Rory Jack Thompson and Maureen Ellen. My sources are Secret Tasmania by Philip and Mary Blake, The Mad Scientist by Jack Newman, The West Hobart, AP News, Wikipedia, The Examiner, and documents from the Magistrates Court in Hobart, Tasmania. Rory Jack Thompson is born in Seattle, Washington on May 10th of 1942. He is the eldest of three boys to American father Richard, an ex-military conscript soldier turned fisherman, and Canadian mother Alice, a dental assistant. In school, Thompson is known to be rather difficult, and simultaneously it seems as though he has difficulties learning. When he's in 10th grade, Thompson's parents separate and he and his brothers are moved from place to place, staying with family or friends alongside either his mother or father. Eventually, his parents officially divorce and his mother gives up custody of her children. Thompson's father is now the sole carer and provider. I couldn't find anywhere that specifically stated he was abusive, but there are some notes and anecdotes about Richard Thompson being rather aloof and distant when it came to his sons. Amidst the separation, Alice, Thompson's mother, steadily turns into an alcoholic and eventually attempts suicide. Regardless of his family situation, when he is in 11th grade, Thompson begins to excel academically. He is being taught by a mathematician rather than a standard teacher and is grouped in with various other bright students into the honours classes for chemistry, maths and physics. Thompson takes up a variety of extracurricular activities. He attends a host of various camps like science, art, music and general summer camps, in between winning academic awards. At one of these camps, Thompson takes up folk dancing and becomes quite active in the community for it. During a folk dancing event, Thomas meets a woman named Luella and the two take to each other. They marry when Thompson is just 17. Some sources say Luella was substantially older than Thompson, but without fully reading his autobiography, I can't find any corroboration. And yes, the fucker, as we will come to know him, wrote an autobiography that I refuse to buy. Thompson graduates and goes to college at San Diego State studying mathematics. During his time studying, Luella and Thompson divorce but stay in contact. After graduating, Thompson applies to MIT for a postgrad degree in oceanography, eventually receiving a PhD in fluid dynamics. It was during his postgrad that Luella and Thompson divorced, but 3 years after their divorce, Luella falls pregnant and she and Thompson have a daughter, Nuala. As parents, they attempt some sort of co-parenting arrangement, but Luella ultimately fights for sole custody and it's granted. In 1974, Thompson is introduced to the woman who will become his second wife, Maureen, a teacher, via some mutual friends at another folk dancing event in San Diego. It isn't long before the two really hit it off and get married. From San Diego, Thompson is presented with a few job opportunities. A tenured position at the University of Sydney or a job as a temporary lecturer at the University of Western Australia, UWA, which is quite a nice uni and has a beautiful campus, just FYI. Maureen, thinking WA would have a nicer climate, convinces Thompson to pick the UWA position, and he does. Eventually, the couple would have a son, Rafi, and a daughter, Melody, here in Australia. And in 1983, the family shifts to Hobart in Tasmania after Thompson is offered a sponsored researcher gig for the CSIRO, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation. It really wouldn't be long after the couple moved that something unknown cracked in Thompson and he began beating Maureen constantly, in front of their kids and in private. Maureen spends a few weeks in hospital and at one point reports Thompson for the domestic assault. Maureen seeks a protective order and she and her kids move out of the home away from Thompson and into a townhouse at 99 Hill Street in central West Hobart. With no current income, Maureen receives benefits and takes a part-time teaching job while the kids are in childcare. Within a few months, the estranged couple begins speaking again and Maureen decides it would be okay for Thompson to have one day and one night a week with his children and that taking them from their father completely would not be good for them. During the divorce and custody proceedings, Thompson begins to feel more and more threatened. The threat is to his finances and his ability to see his children hanging in the balance, as well as the CSIRO-funded family home that he would not be eligible for if he was no longer part of a family. One night, while Thompson has custody of the kids, he tucks them in, locks up the house, leaving his children inside, and goes for a walk. His walk is not aimless. His destination is 99 Hill Street, Maureen's home. His intention? Thompson is going to kill and bury his estranged wife. Thankfully, when he gets within sight of the home, Thompson abandons his ill-intentioned plan and returns to his children. Quickly after this, he begins not sleeping. He takes medication to help him sleep, and he constantly talks of feeling like the world is against him and people aren't keeping their word. Thompson starts to unravel into murderous delusions and intent, so much so that he buys half a sheep at his local butcher shop and dismembers it. His aim with this little experiment, he's a scientist after all, is to see if he can successfully flush the entire amount down the toilet without issue, and exactly how small he needed to cut it to do so. This is the most premeditationiest thing I have ever heard. On a work trip to Sydney, Thompson purchases and returns home with a hacksaw, a meat cleaver, and other tools he feels he needs. On a side note, you can take things like this on a plane in your checked luggage even now, but definitely not in your carry-on. I once had a client when I was a travel agent call me in a rage because he was denied boarding when he tried to take a working chainsaw as a carry-on. You can't do that. On Saturday, September 10th, 1983, Thompson once again has his children in his home for their one night a week visit. He tucks them in once they're asleep, locks up the house with them inside, and sets off for Maureen's. This time, Thompson is wearing a disguise, a wraparound skirt and a wig to conceal his identity. He waits in the garden for Maureen to go to bed and, using a spare key he knows the location of, he enters her home. Thompson attacks his wife in her bed, during which she awakes and is struck by him with a broken chair leg. He knocks Maureen unconscious and strangles her, taking her life. He then proceeds with his disgusting plan, using the tools he has brought with him. He proceeds to dispose of Maureen's body by dismembering her into small pieces. Any remains Thompson couldn't flush, he takes to a nearby reserve, a suburb over, and buries. Thompson then returns home to his children and acts as if nothing has happened. The next day, he takes them swimming, and on Monday, he returns to work. On Tuesday, Thompson reports his wife missing, claiming he had not seen her since he picked up his children for his one night a week with them and has been unable to return them to her. That same Tuesday morning, a sewage worker at a nearby suburb is doing his usual work when he comes across a severed female middle finger in the pipes at his plant. On Wednesday, police connect this missing person's report with this found finger and head to Maureen's home. Inside, they find a large bloodstain on the bed, bloodstains in the hallway, and remnants of human tissue in the bathroom. The coroner, Dr. Royal Cummings, found upward of 60 pieces of unidentifiable human remains in the home sewer system and was successfully able to identify 23 more. It's 2 days into the investigation and police are interviewing Thompson when he mentions that in no way could the good Rory have had anything to do with his wife's death, but sometimes bad Rory takes over and currently bad Rory is dominant. During a search of his home and the seizure of this vehicle, police find an unpublished version of his autobiography where he mentions the murder fantasies of his first wife, in order to have sole custody of his first daughter. The book even includes some ideas of his to murder Maureen, to do the same thing. The very next day after his good Rory, bad Rory bullshit interview, Thompson asks to have his car back because he wants to take his children camping. You can't do that. Besides the fact that the forensics teams aren't finished with the car, officers are worried that if Thompson has killed his wife, that he might also kill his children and then himself if left alone with them, or he might just take off. With these fears, police remove the children from Thompson's custody and place them into the care of social services. I question why they were still in his care anyway, but let's move on. After the removal of his children, Thompson returns to the police station the next day and confesses that bad Rory has killed Maureen and has hidden the evidence. He takes police to the park where they were able to recover another 83 individual pieces of her body, including her head, which was left whole. The total number of pieces found is 167. Thompson explains that on Saturday night he is dressed in overalls, wrapped a thick skirt around his legs, wore a scarf, a wig, and mascara before attacking Maureen. I want to know the thought process behind the mascara. I mean, I can clock the fact that this man isn't the most logical person, but surely anyone close enough to notice him wearing mascara would also be able to clock that this motherfucker is wearing a skirt and a scarf over overalls and a wig. I don't think longer eyelashes are going to help you, bud. Thompson also told officers what was in his tool bag. He carried a leg of a chair, a rubber and cloth gardening gloves, a plumber's drain clearing plunger, a meat cleaver, two knives, an oxyacetylene torch, two hacksaws with three spare blades, and a garrote made of orange rope. Thompson explains that after the attack, he had clogged the household pipes with his disposal method, and with what was left, he burned, bundled, and buried it in the park along with his bloody clothes. He buried them in a hole he had dug earlier in the year for the purposes of evidence concealment. Yeah, you heard me. Earlier in the year. Again, I say the most premeditationist thing ever. Fuckface is charged for first-degree murder. During his trial on the 29th of February, Thompson pleads not guilty, okay, and asks the jury for mercy. He promises he would never do anything like that again and begs them to let him continue his marine research because he would do so much good for society with it. You know what would have been good for society? Not murdering the mother of two of your children. Thompson also admits that it was 12 months before the breakup that he had decided he was going to kill Maureen, saying that his original plan was to bury her alive in their backyard, but his small shovel wouldn't dig a good enough hole, so over the next year he always carried some rope with him in case he ever got the chance to murder his wife. What the fuck? Not guilty, my ass. Eventually, the judge does find him not guilty, but not because of his scientific research or his promise to behave, but because he is ordered mentally unstable, and is remanded to Risedon Prison's mental hospital. According to the publisher of his autobiography, again, ew, Thompson would not acknowledge his disorder, but occasionally that he had little grip on reality. Throughout his detention, he applies twice to the Medical Health Review Tribunal to be declared sane. The tribunal suggested his release, but all attempts were declined by Tasmania's government. In 1994, Thompson legally changes his name to Jack Newman. On 5th of July 1999, when he was scheduled for release in November, Newman / Thompson attempts an escape. He is gardening alone outside the prison walls when he flags down a Metro bus. He is able to obtain a credit card by unknown means, which allows him to withdraw $490 cash to catch a taxi to the airport where he buys a plane ticket to Melbourne. However, after a conversation with a woman he met at a bus stop, Thompson, who is still clad in his prison uniform, is reported to the police. His tip enables the authorities to capture him just minutes before his plane takes off. His escape lasts about 90 minutes. And just so you know, he was physically on the plane, meaning he strolled through the airport and past flight attendants and security in his prison uniform, and no one said a freaking peep. On 18th of September 1999, Thompson is found dead in his cell after hanging himself using his own shoelace. His suicide accompanied the self-inflicted deaths of five other inmates at Risedon, and an inquest into safety and procedures is held. Changes at Risedon isn't all that this case affected. The brutal murder after Maureen's attempts to get help prompted a bigger look into domestic violence law and resources in Tasmania. A group of concerned women started DVAG, Domestic Violence Action Group, in 1987, which through many years of changes, support, evolution and funding became Engender Equality, which has become a leading non-government organisation working with individuals and communities impacted by family violence. If you're in Australia, you can call 1-800-RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732, or Lifeline 13 11 14, 24 hours, 7 days a week, or chat with them online. This episode of Dead Obsessed was researched, written, and edited by me, Ash Rose. Come and join me on Instagram at Dead Obsessed Podcast or write to us at deadobsessedpod@gmail.com. I'll catch you soon and stay obsessed. This episode, wow, conscript scolder, bagel. I have to go discipline a rabbit. I ended up giving them a bunch of treats, which probably isn't gonna stop them from that behavior. Bagel! Anyway.